alcoholic, and my name's Terry Houlihan. First, you guys, if you're going to change the meeting time, make sure you let us know by the end of the month, because we're going to send new schedules to the printer. Okay. I get that, because we're alcoholics and we just don't work that fast. Yes, it is. I took one of the women that I sponsor to Gateway on Monday. I go into treatment facilities, and the two women that were there, I have seen in other facilities many times over the last 10 years, and I always ask them the same question, you know, what did you stop doing? What aren't you doing? And they kind of mumbled, you know, that's usually, well, you know, meetings and didn't get a sponsor and, you know, mumble. And I said, all right. I said, so are you guys done, or, you know, are you going to play around until you die? And they gave me the answer that they always give me. No, I really want it. And I say to them, it's not for people who want it. It's for people who will do it. So are you going to do the deal this time? And they both said yes. So I ran them through the first three steps. And I don't normally go through the first three steps quite that fast with people. But in this situation, I thought, you know what, this is what I need to do for these women. And they're going to be working on a four step. And I'm going to see them next week again. Step two, you know, step one, you know, like we talked about last week, I struggled with it because I didn't understand what an alcoholic was. And I know today that it is a physical allergy combined with a mental obsession. So I know that if I don't put alcohol in my body, the allergy doesn't set off and I don't have to worry about that. So I have to worry about the mental obsession. And that's the part that they told me could be arrested by getting a relationship with a higher power. And so next comes step two, which is, you know, identification of the solution. And I didn't like the solution. I wasn't really interested in having any kind of a relationship with a higher power. And I certainly didn't think that this magical being could restore me to sanity, because I didn't really ever think I was sane to begin with. There is a lovely appendix in this book. It's appendix two. It's called Spiritual Experience. And it's really important because it talks about different ways that people found a relationship with a higher power. And I didn't read that for probably 3 years, and it showed, because I just fought step two really hard. I fought all of them really hard. And step two is really quite simple, and I never thought that it really had that much importance. I just thought, whatever, you just kind of do it. But there's a lot of freedom and a lot of hope in step two that I didn't realize at first, because it doesn't tell me that I have to do anything perfectly and I don't have to do it all at once. And so I came to believe, and that's how it was for me, I came to believe over a period of time that there was some kind of bigger being than me that could restore me to sanity. And I struggled with that part too, but what I know today is that the sanity that they're talking about in the big book is understanding the full knowledge of my condition. And I understand that when I pick up a drink, I'm insane. And so that's where step two comes in. You know, if I know in step one the things that I know about myself, that I'm powerless over alcohol and my life is unmanageable, then step two, that's certainly insanity. Then step two is going to show me the truth about that and restore me to sanity. So when all that was explained to me, it was a little bit easier for me to swallow, but I still just wasn't really interested in, you know, really having any kind of a relationship with a higher power. When I was a kid, both of my grandmothers were in my life. One lived with us, and the other one, we stayed at her house a lot. And the one that lived with us, from my earliest memory, called me a devil child and said that I was going to hell. And I really didn't doubt her. My grandmother. The other one, however, was going to do her best to save my soul, and so she would drag me to random churches. And I remember we went to this Pentecostal church one time, and my grandmother was very stylish, and she had on, and granted it was like early 60s, so bear that in mind. She was wearing a fur coat, and she had on red lipstick, and she just looked, to me, she was just an angel, a beautiful angel. And I remember that this pastor came running down the aisle, and he was screaming at her and pointing his finger at her and telling her that she was going to hell because she was wearing dead animals, and she was painting her face up like a prostitute. And I thought, well, I'm doomed. You know, my grandmother's a saint, and if she's going to hell, there's really not any hope for me. So that was kind of my impression of a higher power for most of my life, that it was tied up with religion, and religion just wasn't for me. It really took me quite some time to be able to separate out the difference between religion and spirituality. And that's where step two really started to help me with that, help me see the difference. Because step two doesn't really ask me to do anything but be willing. And in my opinion and my experience, religions ask you to do a lot of stuff. And I didn't want to do that stuff. Whatever, Ten Commandments and all those things. I didn't want to do those things. So step two is really pretty simple as long as I don't complicate it. And all I have to do is be willing to understand that there is something out there that's greater than me. There was always something greater than me. Vodka was my higher power for a long time. You know, any man that I was in a relationship with was a higher power. Anything where I didn't have to look at what was going on inside of me, I could use as a higher power. So when they explained to me that I probably could make some better choices in what I was using as a higher power, they presented me with this step two and said, you know, this is just the beginning. You don't have to do anything. We just want you to think that maybe there's something out there that can help you run your life better than what you've done thus far. And that was pretty simple. I still fought it because, you know, I just didn't want to do what you guys said to do. I was sure that there was an easier, softer way, and I can assure you there is not. This is the easier, softer way. You know, I was afraid that this higher power wouldn't help me because I didn't believe in him. But even though I didn't believe in him, I was still afraid he wouldn't help me, which didn't make any sense then, but it didn't matter. It's still how I felt. I was so afraid. I was afraid that I was unworthy because I saw other people have these marvelous relationships with these higher powers. And I thought, you know, I don't think that I'm worthy of that. So what am I going to do if I say, okay, I'm going to believe in this higher power, and this higher power doesn't believe in me? Then what am I going to do? And if I do let this higher power into my life, then what am I going to do if it works? Because I don't know how to let go of control of anything. I controlled in my fantasy world, I controlled everything, everyone around me and me. And I didn't know who I was going to be or how I was even going to, you know, make it through the day with this higher power running my life. And, my sponsor said to me, you know, Beverly said to me a lot of times, this is about hope. Step two is about hope. That, you know what, you can walk away from the alcohol, you can walk away from the unmanageability, and you can step into the sunlight of the spirit. And this is the first step that will help you do that. And, you know, she just, she spent a lot of time with me on this step because it was just so, I was so closed-minded. I was so convinced that this higher power was going to punish me for all of the horrible things that I had done. And, you know, as I told you, my grandmother told me I was going to hell at 5. So, you know, I kind of, you know, ran with that for the next, you know, 31 years and did pretty much whatever I wanted to, figuring that it didn't matter anyway. And, you know, what I know today is that I am sane. In regard to my alcoholism, I don't know that I would say that in a lot of other areas of my life, but in regard to understanding my alcoholism, I am sane. I know what will happen to me unquestionably if I pick up a drink. I know what will happen to me if I stop doing the things that you guys taught me to do. You know, there are lots of people that have showed me that what will happen if I stop doing these things. And so working with them, I'm actually, one of the girls that I'm working with now is kind of struggling with this step too. And she says, I don't want to do this. I don't want to give up control. You know, I look at her and I say, you know, you're tired a lot. And she says, yeah. I say, do you think maybe that has anything to do with the fact that you're fighting everyone and everything all the time and trying to run the show yourself? And she swore at me. That happens sometimes when you're a sponsor. And she said, you're right. And I said, I know. and it's, you know, we complicate this so much. There are two chapters in this book that talk specifically about step two. There is a solution, and we agnostics. And I didn't know, I thought I was an atheist when I got here. Then I kind of waffled, and I thought maybe I'm an agnostic, even though I didn't know what an agnostic was. It just kind of sounded nicer than atheist. And basically what an agnostic is someone who's without knowledge of God, and that is really what I was. And as I kept coming back, and as I continued to work in this book and work with my sponsor and listen to you guys, you know, I did come to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. And I hear people say that they do steps 1, 2, and 3 every day, and I don't. I do pretty much steps 10, 11, and 12 every day. And for me, that's what works. I tried doing 1, 2, and 3, and for me, it just felt like I hadn't completed the process. And so if you do steps 1, 2, and 3 every day, that is awesome. That just didn't work for me. And that's one of the things that I love about this is that, you know, we have a perfectly wonderful guide to follow here, but we don't have to do any of it perfectly, and we don't have to do it exactly like somebody else does it. And my step two took a long time. It took months, really, literally months. And it really doesn't have to take that long. It just, you know, just understand that it just requires some willingness on your part. Thank you.
Alrighty, we have question time.
Yeah, thank you, Ian. Yeah, this is sort of a question and something else. I have two higher powers. I have a personal relationship with God, and the basketball lifts me up too, you know what I mean? Is it all right to have more than one power to restore the sanity, to manage the sanity, rather, you know?
It's been suggested to me that I can use the group as a higher power if I want to.
Yeah.
I can use nature as a higher power if I want to. There's many other external, the universe. I have not ever heard of anybody using basketball as a higher power. However, if it works to help you stay sober, then I really just can't judge it.
Yeah, thank you. I got one more. I was just saying, I think to myself that I can't be afraid to win, just to keep in the process and of the ups and downs and make it to that goal line. And that's what I keep trying to think in my mind, you know, that I can't be afraid to win, you know.
Stop thinking.
Yeah, you're right. But it's a good thought, right?
You're sitting in here just like me, so your best thinking probably wasn't much better than mine.
Questions? Anybody?
Seth, alcoholic. Thank you, Terry. When you're working with somebody and you're on step two, and it's like you said, it took you a couple months or a few months to get to it, do you continue to move on with the steps? Or do you wait until they absolutely have a higher power?
I don't wait. Because I didn't really grasp the concept of a higher power, truthfully, until step five. So I keep moving because, when we're going through the book and we're talking about this stuff, they're absorbing it. You know, we're absorbing it gradually. And so, you know, when we get to step three, we're making a decision. And basically I say to them, okay, are you ready to make a decision? You know, are you ready to make a decision to go through with the rest of this process, which is the rest of the 12 steps? And when you get to the end of that 12 steps, you're going to have had a spiritual awakening. Are you willing to do that, even if you don't understand or don't believe that there's a higher power? And usually they'll mumble something like, I guess, because I kind of back them into a corner. I want them to move forward. It's easy to stay stuck, and you know, staying stuck isn't good for an alcoholic. We're either moving forward or we're moving backward. There's no standing still. It's been my experience, at least. So I do still move them through, but we also go back and take a look at that again, and I'll say things like, okay, you know, are you coming to any kind of an understanding that, you know, there is a higher power that's been helping you? And I'll, you know, once you get to know somebody, when you're sponsoring somebody, you know them pretty well, and I will, you know, maybe give them an instance like, well, look at what happened in your life here. Do you think that was you, or do you think that might have been a higher power? And so I hold their hand through it, but I don't stop moving because, you know, it's been my experience that if you're not moving forward, you're going to drink or you're going to die, because that's untreated alcoholism.
Hi, Terry. I'm Deirdre, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Deirdre.
How did you personally come to believe that your higher power was concerned with you specifically and that you were worthy?
My sponsor had to point it out to me because I didn't see it. When I first got sober, I was going to school, and I didn't think that I could do it. I didn't think I was smart enough. I didn't think that I could do anything. I was a bartender and a drunk. And they sent me to school, and I graduated with honors, and I got a job, a pretty decent job in a steel mill, just working in the marketing department. And then 6 months later, they offered me a promotion and I took it. And then a year after that, they offered me another promotion and I took it. And in the meantime, there's this kind of feeling in the back of my neck that I'm unworthy of this, that I have fooled these people, that I can't really do this job. And Beverly would say to me, you know, God put you here because this is where you're supposed to be. God put you here because this is where you're supposed to be. And you didn't get here by yourself, and you can do this. And so I started to kind of believe that she believed that God believed in me, if that makes sense. And so it really was a process. And I would back up a little bit, like something really good in my life would happen, and it would scare the daylights out of me. And I kind of back up a little bit because that sense of unworthiness was in there. And you know, God loves everybody, you know, across the board. We're all, He just loves us, you know. Like I love my cats, like you love your child. That's how God loves us. But I didn't understand that then. I still had that deep-seated sense of unworthiness. I don't know if guys feel that like women do. I just know that we're supposed to fix everybody and heal everybody and feed everybody and do those things. And so, it's a process, but I got there. But I had to have help.
Thanks, Terry. And I'm Leslie, alcoholic.
Hi, Leslie.
And my question is this. One of the things I found was, like, to do things. And I was wondering if there were any actions you were taking, like, on a regular basis during the period of time you were struggling with step two that you're describing, that you did anyway, even if the, you know, even if the conviction was kind of weak, was the body making some, taking some actions? And if so, maybe if you would, like, share what those were.
Absolutely, and actually I wrote it down here. Beverly's big on journaling, so she would have me write, and she would have me write things like, what kind of higher power do you want to have? And what kind of higher power do you believe in now? And whose ideas are those? Because what I realized is every idea that I had about a higher power, none of them were mine. They were all other people's ideas that I had adopted. And so so 10 minutes every day, every night, you know, she had me writing. She had me write about every step. She had me writing. She likes writing. and I did that for a long time. I wrote about step two. I wrote about, you know, and it wouldn't even start out about being about step two. It was just kind of, well, you know, this is how my day went kind of today. And, you know, geez, you know, maybe God had a hand in it. And I'd sort of sneak that in there so that, you know, like God wouldn't see it. Because I didn't really want him to know that I might believe in him a little bit. So I sort of snuck up on God, I guess. I have a friend who she helped me a lot too. She called her God Margaret, and I had this, you know, old white guy, white beard, long hair, you know, pointing at me, sending me to hell vision, and I'm a visual, and so she said her God's name was Margaret, and so I talked to. I started talking to Margaret. Margaret was pretty cool, you know, and because she wasn't a punishing old man, first of all. And my visual of a higher power. Some of you are not old enough to know this, but some of you are. There used to be a Fleischmann's margarine commercial on, and there was a woman walking through a field, and she had on a flowing dress. And she had on a daisy, you know, thing around her head, and it was for Fleischmann's margarine, and she tasted it, and she said, it's not nice to fool Mother Nature. And that was my visual. That became my visual, because I needed, I can't see God. How can I believe in something that I can't see? So in my mind, I had to create a physical picture of a higher power, and that's what mine was. So that's what Margaret looked like for a long time. Actually, my higher power today is a goddess, but I say God because people have a general idea of what I'm talking about that way. But yeah, I did a lot of writing. I did a lot of, you know, putting one foot in front of the other. Anyway, I prayed anyway, even though I didn't believe it and I didn't like it. I did not get on my knees though, because I was not going to do that. So,
thanks very much. Anybody else?
You know, it's good. Thank you, Terry.
You're welcome.
I also had a sponsor that was very big into writing. It's like, I hate writing. Let me tell you. If you didn't write it down, you couldn't talk about it. Now, when you're working with people, I know that, I don't know if that's just because of the times that we got sober in. I don't know. I don't have my guys journal very much at all. And do you continue that tradition on with the people that you work with, or just the...
I do, just because... I figure I had to do it, they have to do it too.
How do you do that?
Well, they're a little afraid of me. I don't understand. They're a little scared of me. I don't understand it, but, you know, they kind of are. And I tell them it doesn't have to be big. I want you to write two or three sentences before you go to bed. I don't care what it's about. But for me, it's about getting into the habit so that when they're jammed up, when they're jammed up with something and they can't figure out why they're jammed up,
you know, they write until they figure it out. And a lot of times, you know, when they do, when they're doing that, by the time they call me with whatever their problem is, they already know what the answer is because they've already worked through it through writing and prayer. And for me, seeing something on paper makes it more real to me and makes it easier to understand. I don't hardly journal at all now, but there are periods of time when I do because I can't find the answer and I'm just kind of stuck.
Anyone else?
Never asked questions before. Dear, you're alcoholic again. My question has a couple parts. Have you ever had any sponsees that have had, like, that have had, at least temporarily, their sponsor be something like an inanimate object, like a chair or something, just to have something? And also, have you noticed a difference in sponsees coming in that already have a belief in a higher power, like in terms of people getting it, grasping it quicker, like having an easier time getting sober because they already, maybe they grew up in a church, which doesn't necessarily have anything to say about, they may have a poor relationship, like they may have had to get rid of their concept of a higher, like of God, because they might have a negative connotation with God, but is there anything that you've noticed in terms of people that already have, you know, some kind of, you know, if they already do, like when I came into the program, I felt fortunate, like I felt that I had an advantage because I already had a relationship with my higher power that I call God. So I didn't have to struggle in that way. And I just wondered if you noticed a difference between maybe people that did have that already established or like ones that maybe... people that, you know, do they flourish any better than ones that, you know, chose theirs as a tree or a chair or, you know, something like that, or even people in the room, you know, if they, ones that chose nature, maybe choose nature. I shouldn't talk in the past, but you know what I mean? Is there any kind of, I was just curious to know if you kind of see anything, like, does it help them in any way to kind of, you know, get the process of moving forward any easily, more easily, by grasping that concept quicker or not necessarily?
It's been my experience that a lot of times they have to be deprogrammed. Because if they come from a religious background, then they're fairly certain they know more than I do. And about their religion, they absolutely do. About spirituality, they don't know anything. And the book's very clear about that, you know, and that's what I follow. You know, I say to them, look, you know a whole lot more about religion than I do. You know a whole lot more maybe about the Bible or whatever your religion is. You know a whole lot more about that than I do. But you have not been utilizing this or you would not be in the position that you are in. So maybe we should try a different way. And I never discourage people from going to church. I suggest that maybe while they're going through the steps, they stick to that. But I never say, don't go to church. I have noticed, though, a lot of times there's some conflict in them when they try to do both. And I don't know. Actually, people that come in here with no concept of a higher power at all are usually more open to people that already have a preconceived notion of what one is. Yeah. Did I answer all of it? Was that all of it? Okay.
Anyone else? Well, thank you, Terry.
Well, I just got to tell you guys, I drove past here today because I was, you know, performing my conference speech, which you will never hear. I've given thousands of them and nobody ever hears them but me. But really, I just happened to glance down and I have a cover on this big book and it is the quote that was on Dr. Bob's desk and for me, it kind of solidifies what step two means to me, humility, perpetual quietness of the heart. It is to have no trouble. It is never to be fretted or vexed, irritable or sore, to wonder at nothing that is done to me, to feel nothing done against me. And I really want to thank you guys for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.